So the Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Hey Amud Beis is discussing the concept of Chashid Amamona Chashra Shvuasa, whether a person who is suspect regarding money, whether we're not sure whether he takes other people's money, is that person Chashid on Shvuah? Is he suspect with respect to taking false oaths? So the discussion there, the Gemara says Chashid Amamona Yeh Chashra Shvuasa or Lo Chashra Shvuasa. So the Gemara here in source one attempts to bring a proof from the following statement of Rav Huna. The Gemara says the following case. Let's say you have a shomer, a person who's supposed to be watching a pikadon, and he claims, the shomer claims, that the object was lost. And he's willing to pay, even if he's not obligated, he's willing to pay for the lost object and doesn't want to have to take the regular shvuas shomer. So Rav Huna says, in source one, nevertheless, we force him to take a shavua that he's not holding on to the money. Meaning, this person who is a shomer, who is claiming that the object was lost, we force him to take a shavua that he's not holding on to the object. But wait a second. Why are we forcing him to take a shavua? Because we suspect that he's actually holding on to the object, claiming that it was lost or stolen. And nevertheless, we're telling him, take a shavua to prove your innocence or to prove that the object was actually lost or stolen. So what do you see? We are willing to force a person to take a shavua even though we suspect him for taking someone else's money. So you see, chashra mamona, lo chashra shavua, says the Gemara. Why don't we say that since this person, we suspect him for holding on to the object that he is supposed to be a shomer for, why do we allow him to take a shavua? So don't you see that we don't say just because a person is a suspect regarding money doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take a false oath. So they were, no. There, he's not really suspect regarding money. Why? There, the guy is not really such a bad guy. He's more heter. He's justifying his behavior. Even if it's true, he's holding on to the object, he's not such a bad guy in his own eyes because he thinks, I'm paying for the object. So what's the big deal to the owner that he no longer has the object that I was supposed to watch for him? I'm paying him for it. So therefore, he's not really suspect regarding money. We don't think he's stealing someone else's object because he's justifying it. So he's not really chashud, and therefore that's why we believe him to take a shua. Says the Gemara, wait a second. Says the Gemara, fine. He's paying for the object, but lamaisa, he's still doing the aver of losachmod. He coveted someone else's object. He kept it for himself. And granted, he gave the money for it, but isn't he still violating losach mode? And since he's violating losach mode, which is a monetary avera, therefore he is suspect when it comes to money. And therefore, how could it be that we give him a shavua to take? How do we trust him by taking an oath? Says the Gemara, something very, very vague. Losach mode le'inshi below demei mashmalhu. Says the Gemara, no. This guy doesn't realize that he's violating losach mode. The guy doesn't realize that he's violating losach mode. Why? Because he thinks that he's giving money. He thinks that it's true that he's holding on to someone else's object. But since he's giving the owner of the object money in return, in his eyes, he is not violating losach mode. And therefore, he is not suspect regarding money. And therefore, we believe him to take a shavua. Again, because since he's justifying his behavior, therefore he is not considered suspect, chashid an mamon, therefore we allow him to take a shavua, to take an oath, to swear that he is not holding on to the object. That is what the Gemara says. Now, the truth is that there are two different ways to read the last line of the Gemara. We translated the Gemara that the guy justifies his behavior and says to himself that he's not violating losach mode, even though he coveted and took the other person's object, since he gave money in exchange. Therefore, the guy thinks that he's not violating losach mode. So wait a second. Does he just think that he's violating losach mode, but in reality, he's violating losach mode? Or do we say, no, The truth is that when he gives money for the object that he covets, he no longer violates lo sachmod. In other words, is this guy making a mistake? Does one violate the aver of lo sachmod when he takes someone else's object? Only if he doesn't give money in return. But if he gives money in return, that actually gets around the prohibition of lo sachmod. Or do we say, no, regardless of whether the person gives money or not, even if he gives money, the fact that you took the object against the person's will, even if you gave money in return, you still violate lo sachmod. Those are two ways to read the Gemara. We will see that there are two approaches in the Bali Tosis. Two different opinions of whether one violates lo sachmod, even if they give money in return for the object that they took. But in order to appreciate the comment of the Tosfos, we have to see a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Beis, in Source 2. Just a little context. The sugya there in Sanhedrin is discussing the various people who are pasul edus, the people who are unable to give testimony in court. And most of them have to do with violating different types of averus. Many are monetary, like the gambler, the gazlan, the malveh ribis, all those people, the people who do business on the Shemitah year, people who violate various halachos are pasul to give edus in court. That's what the Mishnah says in the third paragraph of Maseches Sanhedrin. The Gemara, in Source 2, on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Beis, quotes a brisa. The Gemara says there's a list, there are a bunch of people that even though in the time of the Mishnah they weren't pasul edus, at a later point in history, the Tanoim added them to the list and included them amongst the people who are pasul edus. And one of them on the list is people called Chamsonim. Who are these Chamsonim? So take a look. The Gemara in Source 2, HaChamsonim, they added them. So why initially were these Chamsonim, which just will translate, Chamsonim are people who take objects from other people. They're chome something, they take something from someone else. So why were these chamsonim who are taking objects from other people initially kosher? And then later on in history, the Beis Din, the chachamim, determined that they should be pasul edus. What changed? So says the Gemara, Meikara savor demeika yoiv akrai ba'almuhu. The Gemara says that initially they thought that the chamsonim who were taking objects from people, even though that wasn't right, they were paying in exchange for the object that they took. So therefore, for that reason, they shouldn't be pasul edus. But once they saw that, no, they're just taking objects without paying in return. At that point, the Chachamim declared that the Chamsonim are going to be pasul edus. So wait a second. Originally, they were taking money, they were taking objects from people, but paying in return, therefore they were not considered pasul edus. And then, later on, when they realized, the Chachamim realized that they weren't actually paying any money, they were just taking objects from people, therefore, at that point, they were considered pasul edus. But wait a second. I don't understand. Weren't they violating lo sachmod initially? Just because they were giving money in exchange for the object that they took, don't we say that when a person takes, forces, pressures someone to give him an object, even if he gives money in return, doesn't he still violate lo sachmod? And if that's the case, if he was violating lo sachmod originally, why weren't they pasul edus? Why did they have to wait for a later point in history to realize, oh, they're not actually giving money, then they pasul them? But originally, they were still violating lo sachmod, and that is a Torah prohibition, enough that should pasul them edus. Who asked the kasha? Tosfos, it's Sanhedrin. Take a look in Source 3. Meikar Savar to make a Yoiv, V'im Tomar. Tosfos asks, Lifsol Midaraisa the Ka'avar Lav Delo Sachmod. Why were these Chamsonim not pasul edus initially for violating Lo Sachmod? Even though it's true they were giving money in exchange for the object that they took, but isn't that still a violation of Lo Sachmod? So says Tosfos, maybe not. V'yesh Lomar Delo Sachmod Mashma Delo Yoiv Demei. Whoa, says Tosfos, tremendous chiddush. It could be that one actually does not violate lo sachmod if they give them money in return. It could be that the violation of lo sachmod is only if you pressure someone to give you an object without giving money in return. However, if you pressure your friend to give, for him to give you his car, his house, whatever the case may be, even if you pay in return, says Taisus, you don't violate losachmo. Oh, but wait a second. The problem is our Gemara in Bava Metzion Daf Hey. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that the guy who we are forcing to take a shavua, isn't he chashed on mammon because we think that he's holding on to someone else's object? The Gemara says no. He justifies his action because he thinks to himself he's not violating losach mode by giving money in exchange. But wait a second. Wasn't that just a justification? Isn't the reality that he actually violates losach mode? So says Tosis, take a look. Vim Tomar, Vaharminam, Parakamad, Abba Metzia. Don't we say in the Gemara, and Dafhei, losach mode, Bildo, Demei, Mashmalhu? Mashmalhu, Inshi, Dafkahu, Demishtama. Aval, Kintoim, Losach mode, Havil, Pyudio, of Demei. Isn't the way to read the Gemara in Abba Metzia that this guy who we're forcing to take a shvuah had a misconception? He thought that he's not violating losach mode, but the reality is that even if he gives the money, isn't he still violating losach mode? Says Tosis, no. Maybe no. Maybe the way to read the Gemara in Bava Metzia is that when the guy actually gives the money in exchange, even though he took the object against the owner's will, nevertheless, the truth is that when he gives money in exchange, he does not violate lo sachmod. And that's why the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that initially those people were not possible Avis, because even though they were taking other people's property by force, by coercion, since they were paying money in return, that got around the problem of Lo Sachmon. That is the first opinion of Tosfos. So far, so good? Yeah, so far, so good. Okay. Now, Tosfos says a different answer, different shot. Vod Yishlomo. Again, the question that Tosfos is dealing with is, why initially in the Gemara in Sanhedrin were the Chamsanim, the people who are taking objects by force, not possible Eidus? So Tosfos' first answer is because since they were giving money initially, they didn't violate Losachum. Tosfos says, no. Maybe it could be, even if a person gives the money in return, they still violate Losachum. Okay, so then why were they initially not possible Eidus when they violate Losachum? Says Tosfos, a different exception to Losachum. A different exception to the rule. Vod Yishlomar. Dehacha hachikamar. Demei kayoivi. Vahayu mefaisim oso. Ad shiyomer rotza ani. Imkein lo avri alav de lo sachmo. Says Tosfos, no. This is the way to read the Gemara. Initially, not only were the Chamsonim giving money in exchange for the object that they coerced the owner to give them, they also got it to the point where the owner agreed verbally. It wasn't just that I went ahead and I took Chaim's pencil and I threw him 25 cents for the pencil. I tickled Chaim till he said, Rotza Ani, gave me the pencil, and then I gave him 25 cents. So the reason I didn't violate Losach Mode is not because I gave the money. Really, even if I give money, I could violate Losach Mode. It's because Chaim eventually agreed by saying Rotza Ani. And when the owner of the object agrees verbally to give the object, Tosfos suggests that the one who coerced the owner to give the object does not violate Losach Mode. Okay? So we have two opinions in Tosfos. The first opinion, Tosfos thinks that one violates Losach Mode only if he does not give money in exchange. But if he gives money in exchange, one does not violate the lav, the prohibition of Losach Mode. That is the first opinion in Tosfos. The second opinion in Tosfos is that no, even if a person gives money in exchange, he still violates Losach Mode. But if you coerce the owner to give it to the point where he actually verbally agrees and says, Rotza Ani, I want to give you the object, I want to sell you the object, that is when the Chamson no longer violates Lo Sach Mode. Those are the two opinions of Tosfos. Now, where is Tosfos getting this idea that when the owner says Rotza Ani, when the owner verbally agrees to give the object, he doesn't violate Losach Mode? Where did Tosfos get that out of thin air? Where is Tosfos getting that from? So if you guys remember from a couple months ago, it's a Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara here in Source 5, the Gemara, very important Gemara at the end of Perek HaKonis, and Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph, says the Gemara, Amar li Rav Avi l'Rav Ashi, Ma bin Gazlan l'Chamsan, what is the difference between a thief and a chamsam, which we're going to assume is a person who violates lo sachmo? What is the difference between a gazlan and a chamsan, a person who violates lo sigzol and a person who violates lo sachmo? What is the nafkamina? What is the way? What is the nafkamina? What is the practical difference between a gazlan and a chamsan? So says the Gemara, Omerle, chamsan yohiv demei, gazlan lo yohiv demei. A chamsan pays for the object that he takes, and a gazlan does not pay for the object that he takes. Whoa. So it sounds like from the Gemara at this point that one violates lo sachmod even if he pays for the object. Says the Gemara, no, not so fast. Omer le, iyoiv demei, chamsan karis le. If the guy pays for the object, you're going to call him a chamsan? V'homer rafuna talu v'zovin zvine zvini. We know the halacha is that if you coerce a person to make a sale and he agrees, the sale is binding. Even though, at first glance, the coercer, the one who forced the guy to make the sale, is violating lo sachmod. So why is the sale binding? Isn't it because the coercer, I'm not sure if that's a word, but we'll make it a word, the coercer, the one who pressures his friend, the chamsan, is forcing the guy to make the sale, must be because he's giving the money. Isn't that the way to get around lo sachmod? Says the Gemara, no, not so fast, that's not why. Lo kasha, ha de amar rotza ani, ha de lo amar rotza ani. So the way Tosis read the Gemara is as follows. That what the Gemara is telling us is that the reason the sale is binding is in a case of Talu of Ezavin, Zvine Zvini, when Reuven presses Shimon, or I presser Chaim, to sell me his pencil, the reason it's binding is only in a case where Chaim says Rotza Ani. There, since Chaim said Rotza Ani, I don't violate Lo Sachmod, and Memela, that's why the sale is binding. However, theoretically, if Chaim would not agree to the sale, if Chaim would not have said Rotza Ani, then I would have violated Lo Sachmod. The simple read of the Gemara is, even if I would have given the money. Lechora, that is where the second opinion Tosis is getting this idea. So again, we have two different opinions in the Bali Tosis. The first opinion in Tosis is that one only violates Lo Sachmod if he does not give money in return, but if he gives money in return, there's no violation of Lo Sachmod. And the second opinion in Tosis is that even if you give money in exchange in return for the object that you took, you still violate Lo Sachmod unless the owner agrees verbally by saying Rotza Ani. Okay, that is the two Gemaras, the Gemara Bava Metzia that we started with, the Gemara Bava Kama Halacha Beis, and the opinion of Tosfos. Now, there is a very, very interesting and difficult Rambam in the Sugya of Lo Sachmod. If you take a look in Source 6, we're going to read it inside. The Rambam is fascinating, and there are two major issues with the Rambam that's going to force us to redefine how we understand the prohibition of Lo Sachmod. So take a look at the Rambam inside here in Source 6. The Rambam is in Hilchos Gzeilah Vaveda, Perek Aleph Halacha Tes. Says the Rambam, Kol hachomed avdo, o amaso, o beis v'keil shel chavero. Anyone who covets his friend's slave, or slave woman, or house, or vessel, o kol davar she'ef shelo she'ikneu mimenu, anything that you could purchase from your friend, v'hichbed alav b'ro'im, v'hivtzer bo at shelokcho mimenu, and you pressured him verbally, physically, to the point where he gives it to you, afal pisha nasan lo damim rabim, even though you gave him a tremendous amount of money for the object, says the Rambam, hari ze over below sase shenemar lo sachmod. Okay, so far not so controversial. The Rambam is clearly taking a stand on the question of whether one violates lo sachmod if they give money or not. What's the Rambam's opinion? Does one violate lo sachmod if they give money? Yes, the Rambam says that even if you give a tremendous amount of money, you still violate lo sachmod if you pressured your friend to give you the object, even though you paid him an exorbitant amount of money. Nevertheless, you still violate lo sachmod, like that opinion in Tosis that we saw. Okay, so far, not so controversial. Wow. Now, the Rambam says in the next line, Vein lokin alav zeh, one does not get malchus, mipnei she'in bo maisa. Even though normally, if a person violates a lav in a Torah, a Torah prohibition, the halach is that they get lashes, right? Malchus is the punishment for one who violates a lav. However, the Gemara Maseches Mako says that one only gets Malchus, if they violate a lav sheyesh bo maisa. It has to be that they violate the Avera through an action. However, if they were passive when they violated the Avera, even though they did an Avera and it's bad, but they're not going to get Malchus. Lashes are only given for a lav sheyesh bo maisa. So says the Rambam, lo sach mod is a lav she'in bo maisa. At first glance, why is it a lav she'in bo maisa? Because how does a person violate lo sach mod? What's the definition of lo sach mod? Do not covet, right? Covet is a feeling. It is desiring that which belongs to someone else. So therefore, it would make sense that lo sach mod is a lav she'in bo maisa. Therefore, even though a person violates lo sach mod by coveting his friend's object, nevertheless, he does not get malchus. That's fair, right? Problem is the next line in the Rambam. Rambam says, "Ve'ena over belav zeh ad sheyikach hachefetz shechamad." Says the Rambam, but one does not violate lo sach mod until they take the object that they coveted. Until the person takes the object that he coveted, he does not violate lo sach mod. So wait a second. The Rambam just told us that one does not get malchus for lo sach mod because it's a lav she'in bo maisa. Then in the same breath, the Rambam says that one only violates lo sach mod if they take the object from their friend. Isn't that a lav she'yesh bo maisa? Ein lecha lav she'yesh bo maisa gadol mizeh. The Rambam is telling us that one only violates lo sach mod if they physically take the object from their friend. If they just coveted, the Rambam says, they don't violate lo sach mod. Only if they coveted the object to the point where they took the object from his friend, at that point he violates lo sach mod. So how can the Rambam say with a straight face that lo sach mod is a lav she'ein bo maisa? Here it's a lav she'yesh bo maisa. If you're going to tell me that you only violate lo sach mod by taking the object, so then how is this a lav, a prohibition without an action? Here, of course there's an action, so you should get malchus. What does the Rambam mean? Number one. Number two, the Rambam makes no mention of the idea of rotzani. Right? The Rambam does not quote that Gemara Bava Kamma that one avoids lo sach mod if the owner of the object verbally agrees. Why did the Rambam leave that out? Isn't that an integral part of lo sach mod, that if the owner of the object verbally agrees, that gets around the prohibition of lo sach mod? The Rambam left that whole Gemara out. What's the idea behind this? So if you take a look, the Ravid asks both these questions. You see in the bolded part in the Rambam, you see Hasagas Ravid. So the Ravid says, the third to last line, he says, Kol HaChomin Abdo Amasa Al Pishay Nasl Damim Omar Avram. The Aleph is Omar Avram. The Ravid's name was Rav Avram and David. So the Aleph, he starts every Hasaga, every comment on the Rambam, he starts with Aleph, Omar Avram. Avram, I say, Avram says, Omar Avram. V'lo Omar Rotza Ani. Meaning the first comment of the Ravid is that the Rambam leaves out the idea that in order to violate lo sach mod, it has to be that the owner does not verbally agree. But if the owner verbally agrees, the Ravid says, based on the Gemara Bava Kamma that we saw, that one does not violate lo sach mod. Why does the Rambam leave that out? Question number one. Question number two, take a look in the second to last line, Amar Ram. Lo, and this is going on the Rambam's comment that it's a lav she'in bo maisa, and therefore you don't get malchus. Says the Ravid, listen to this harsh lashon. Lo ra'isi davar tema gadol mizeh. I've never seen anything more bewildering than this comment of the Rambam. This is the biggest Peladika thing I've ever read in my life. V'heichan maisa gadol minatilas achepetz. How can the Rambam say with a straight face that one does not get malchus for violating lo sach mod because it's a lav she'in bo maisa? Then the next line, the Rambam says, one only violates lo sach mod when he takes the object. Taking the object is a tremendous maisa. That is an act. That is an action. How can the Rambam say it's a lav she'in bo maisa? Avahayel lomar, the Rambam should have said, mipnei shu chai b'tashlumin, shahayu kegazlan, shachai lahashav esagzela. The Ravid said that the Rambam should have said that one does not get malchus because, for a different reason, it's what we call a lav shenitan l'tashlumin. The halacha is that if a person violates an object, violates an avera, that they can make good, they can return the object, let's say a gazlan, A gosling does an act of theft, but he doesn't get malchus, the Gemara says, because it's a lav anitin latashlumin. Since he can pay back the person that he harmed, he can pay back the owner of the object, therefore he does not get malchus because it's a lav hanitan latashlumin. Says the Ravid, this is very important, says the Ravid, he thinks that lo sachmod, he agrees with the Rambam that you don't get malchus, but not because it's a lav she'in bo maisa. He thinks that you don't get malchus because it's a lav hanitin latashlumin, because the one who took the object from his friend has to pay back, has to give it back, or has to pay back money in return. Since that's the case, that's why he doesn't get malchus. Not because it's a lav she'in bo maisa, rather because it's a lav anitin latashlumin, just like a gazlan. If you have a thief who steals, he does not get lashes because since he has to pay back the person that he stole from, it's what we call a lav hanitin latashlumin. It's subject to paying back. Therefore, there's no malchus. So too, the Ravid thinks that lo sachmod is also a lav hanitin latashlumin, since he has to return the object that he stole. Therefore, he's not going to get malchus. But in terms of lav she'in bo maisa, says the Ravid, what is the Rambam talking about? Since the Rambam said that you only violate the law by taking an object, how could it be that the Rambam says that it's a lav she'in bo maisa? So the question is, what is the pshat in the Rambam? Everyone here, the two questions on the Rambam. One is the Rambam leaves out the idea of rotza ani. And the second is, how can the Rambam call lo sachmod a lav she'in bo maisa? When the Rambam says that one only violates lo sachmod if they do the action of taking the object from his friend. Good question. Probably not, because if he takes it by force, literally physically by force, and he doesn't give anything in return, so that's zela. Lo sachmod potentially is when the person gives the money. That's why actually Tosis and Bav Metzia thinks that a person who violates lo sigzol actually violates zela and lo sachmod. So it depends on whether what you hold about giving the money or not. That's a good question. It could be that the person who violates Zela also violates Lo Sachmod. But either way, the question is, what is the pshat in the Rambam? Yeah? Okay. So the Achronim over the past 50, 60 years have all said pretty much the same pshat in understanding the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. This can be found in the Stipler's Sefer on Chumash called Birchas Peretz. And Parshas Yisro. Rav Soloveitchik also was famous for saying over this biur, this explanation of the machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid, and others have said this fundamental explanation of the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. And it goes as follows. Yesh lachkor. What is the pshat in the iser of lo sachmod? One can understand lo sachmod in one of two ways. Is lo sachmod fundamentally an emotional thing? It's an internal thing, like the translation of the word, do not covet. Is that the idea? Is that the violation of Lo Sachmod? Or is Lo Sachmod really similar, like Chaim was saying, very similar to Gzela? It's taking someone else's money by force against their will. Says the Stipler, the Rambam held that Lo Sachmod fundamentally is an emotional feeling. It's coveting with one's heart, desiring one's friend's object. Now, the Rambam says, how much do you have to covet? How much do you have to desire in order to violate Lo Sachmod? It has to be a tremendously strong feeling to the point that you actually took the object from your friend. The Aveira fundamentally is an internal feeling of coveting one's friend's object. But if I stam, you know, I see Evan's shirt. I like Evan's shirt. Do I like it? I see this every day. Actually, not this every day. Every other day. So, I like Evan's shirt. So, I like it. But do I like it so much that I'm willing to rip it off Evan's back? No. So, do I violate Lo Sachmod? Says the Rambam, no. You only violate Lo Sachmod if you desire the object so much that it brings you to the point that you actually pressured your friend to give it to you, that you actually took it from him. So fundamentally, Lo Sachmod, according to the Rambam, is the feeling of coveting, of desiring your friend's object, but it has to be a strong enough feeling that it comes to the point that you took the object from your friend. That's why The Rambam thinks that lo sachmod fundamentally is a lav she'ein bo maisa. Even though the Rambam says that one only violates lo sachmod if it comes to the point where they take the object from his friend, where he takes the object from his friend, but since fundamentally the avera is violated with an internal feeling, it's just that there's a condition, there's a tenai, there's a shear. How much do you have to covet to the point where you took the object, you took the shirt, you took the car, you took the house, whatever the case may be? If you desired it so much that you were willing to go to that length, you went to the whole 9 yards in order to fulfill your desire, says the Rambam, that's when you violate lo sachmod. But fundamentally, it's a lav she'ein bo maisa. One violates it with a feeling. It has to be a strong feeling, but a feeling nonetheless. One violates the avera with that feeling, and therefore there's no malchus. And says the Stipler, that's why the Rambam's of the opinion that even if the owner says rotza ani, even if the owner agrees, still the coveter, the coercer, still violates lo sachmod. Why? Because just because Chaim agreed to give me his pencil, Evan agreed to give me his shirt, nevertheless, I still coveted the object so much to the point where I coerced them to give it to me. It's true, in the end they agreed. But since I had such a strong desire, I coveted it so much to the point where I took the object from them, says the Rambam, you still violate lo sachmod. So that's why the Rambam leaves out the condition of rotza ani, because it doesn't really matter, according to the Rambam, whether the owner agrees to giving the object, as long as my feeling was so strong that it took me to the point where I was willing to take the object from my friend, that is the violation of lo sachmod. And that's why there's no malchus. The Ravid disagrees. And the Ravid thinks, fundamentally, lo sachmod is like zela. Lo sachmod is taking a friend's object against his will. Now, gzela may be a more direct, aggressive form of stealing money, where lo sachmod, you kind of verbally pressure the guy to give you the object. But the Ravid thinks fundamentally lo sachmod is an avera of taking one's money by force. Yes, it's true that what you are motivated by was the desire, the feeling to do that, to take you really liked the Chaim sweatshirt, you really liked Evan's shirt. But still, the Ravid thinks, not like the Rambam, the Ravid thinks fundamentally lo sachmod is an avera of gzela. It's almost synonymous with gzela. There may be some nuanced differences, but they're both fundamentally a prohibition of taking someone else's money by force. Whereas the Rambam thinks lo sachmod fundamentally is a feeling of coveting, of desiring, that one only violates if the feeling is so strong that it took you to the point of taking the object. The Ravid thinks no. The Ravid thinks lo sachmod is really similar to gzela, and the prohibition is not necessarily the feeling. Rather, lo sachmod is coveting, is taking one's money, taking someone else's possession, because you coveted it. But fundamentally, the prohibition is taking someone else's possessions by force against their will. That's why the Ravid thinks that if the owner says rotza ani, if the owner agrees, then I'm not necessarily taking against his will. It's no longer like zela. Zela is if the owner says, I don't want you to steal my object, and the gazlan goes ahead and takes it. That's zela. So since the Ravid thinks lo sachmod is like zela, therefore, if the owner says rotza ani, if the owner verbally agrees to giving over the object, the Ravid's of the opinion that he does not violate lo sachmod, as opposed to the Rambam, who thinks that one violates lo sachmod even if the owner verbally agrees, because the prohibition, according to the Rambam, is not necessarily taking the money by force. The violation is the feeling of coveting, of desiring your friend's possession to the point where you coerce him to give it to you. That is the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. And it's the machlokas l'shitasam in both of those cases, both in terms of the shaila of whether rotza ani gets around the prohibition of lo sachmod, and also whether it's considered a lav she'ein bo maisa. The Rambam thinks it's a lav she'ein bo maisa because fundamentally it's a prohibition of feeling, coveting, desiring, and the Ravid thinks fundamentally it's a prohibition of taking money by force. It's an action. Therefore, the Ravid thinks it is a lav sheyesh bo maisa. Now, if you remember, there was another machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Ravid said that the one who violates lo sachmod has to give the object back. He has to give the object back. According to the Rambam, would you say that the coveter has to give the object back? He paid money for it. Does he have to give the object back? So the Achronim assume, the Magen Mishnah and the Stipler, they both assume that the Rambam would think that the one who violated Los Achmod is actually allowed to keep the object. He did the wrong thing. He violated Los Achmod. He coerced his friend to give him the object, but he's allowed to keep the object. And the Ravid says explicitly that the one who violates Los Achmod has to give the object back. That's why he calls it a lav hanitan l'tashlumin. So explains the Stipler, and the Magen Mishnah says the same idea a few hundred years earlier, as follows. That machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid of whether you have to give the object back is also dependent on this machlokus of how to understand Los Achmod. The Rambam, who thinks that Los Achmod is not necessarily a prohibition of taking one's money by force, it's the bad, disgusting feeling of jealousy, of coveting, of desiring someone else's object, that is the aver of Los Achmod. Okay, so it was terrible. Bad midos. You shouldn't have done that. But Lamaisa, if you paid the guy for the object, and he's not trying to take it back from you, you own it. It's yours. Maybe you should be a nice guy and give it back, but fundamentally, you don't have to give it back because it was not a violation of gzela. It was a violation of bad midos, of coveting, of desiring. So that's why the Rambam thinks that one is allowed to keep the object that he took by coercion as long as he paid for it, because fundamentally the Rambam thinks that Los Achmod and Los Igzol are not the same thing. Los Igzol is taking money by force. The Los Achmod is coveting, desiring someone else's object. The Ravid, though, holds that Los Achmod and Los Igzol are fundamentally the same. They're both averos of taking someone else's money by force. So therefore, just like it's obvious by gzela, there's a mitzvah of a heshev as a gzela, you have to return the object that you stole. therefore, the Ravid is of the opinion that the one who violated Los Achmod also has to give the money back. Because fundamentally, according to the Ravid, the prohibition of Los Achmod is taking someone else's money by force against his will. Therefore, just like by gzela, when you take someone else's money against their will, you have to return the object. So too, if a person did it through the derech of Los Achmod, he even gave money, nevertheless, he has to give the object back to the original owner, because fundamentally, he violated the aveira of taking someone else's money against his will. He never had full gemiras das to give it over to the coveter, and therefore, that is why the Ravid is of the opinion that the person who violated Los Achmod has to give the money back. So these three machlokos, these three arguments between the Rambam and the Ravid, one, the question of rotza ani; two, the question of whether it's a lav shiyes bo maisa, lav shein bo maisa; and three, the question of whether the one who violates Los Achmod has to give the object back, the machlokos Rambam and the Ravid, by all three of those, depends on their understanding, their shita regarding the nature of the prohibition of Los Achmod. The Rambam, who thinks that Los Achmod fundamentally is a feeling, an emotion of coveting, desiring to the point where you take your friend's object, but fundamentally it's not like Zela. Therefore, the Rambam thinks you violated, even if you don't say Rotza, even if he says Rotza Ani, it's a Lav She Ein Bo Maisa, and you can keep the object. Whereas the Ravid, who thinks that fundamentally Los Achmod is like Zela, and you're coercing someone, their property by force against their will, even if you're paying for it, the Ravid thinks it's similar to gzela. Therefore, the Ravid thinks that if you say rotza ani, it's not a problem of Los Achmod. Two, it's considered a lav shiyish ma'isa. But three, you have to give the object back, just like by gzela. Okay, now,
does nobody hold that Los Achmod is simply an act of coveting without an act?
It seems like the Rambam and the Ravid both agree.
Have you known the question on the Torah, or explain it?
Yeah. So the famous Ibn Ezra that Chaim and I spoke about beforehand, the Ibn Ezra in Parshas Yisro seems to assume that the simple feeling of coveting, one violates Los Achmod. How do I know that? Because the Ibn Ezra asks the question, how could the Torah command Los Achmod if it's just a feeling? It's a machshava. You can't really control those initial feelings. How could you have a prohibition where it's something that's beyond your control? So he gives the whole famous mashal of the prince, the farmer and the princess, and he has no desire for her because she's out of his league. So too, we should always view other people's possessions as something which has no shaychus to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for everyone exactly what they need. So whatever Evan has, whatever Jordan has, no shaykhis to me, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me what I need. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them what they need, similar to the farmer and the princess. That's the famous idea of the Ben Ezra. But what do you see from the Ben Ezra? The question was presuming that one violates Lo Sachmud was just a feeling.
Yeah.
If you held like the Rambam, the Ravid, the answer is obvious. Yeah. You only violate Lo Sachmud if you actually take the object. That you can control. That you can control. So you see that the Ibn Ezra didn't understand the way. The Ibn Ezra, he wasn't, he was explaining the Pshuto Shel Mikra. He wasn't necessarily understanding, explaining what the halach is. Often you have to distinguish between, you know, the Mefarshim who explain the Pshuto Shel Mikra and the Chazal who are working with the Torah Shel Peh and trying to understand what the actual halach is. So I'm not aware of any Rishonim who are halachists who understand that one violates Lo Sachmud with a feeling alone, but there is a separate prohibition of Lo Sisave. Lo Sisave is a separate prohibition that clearly one violates with the feeling alone. We're talking about specifically Lo Sachmud, the one in the Ten Commandments, in the Aseret Divros, how one violates Lo Sachmud. Just one quick...
Once you return that item, does Lo Sachmud go away?
Yeah, you fix the Avera, just like Begzela. Just like Begzela, one fixes the Avera by fulfilling the mitzvah of a Heshefes Begzela, by returning the stolen object. The Ravid is of the opinion that one fixes the Avera of Lo Sachmud by returning the object that he coveted. Exactly. That's why it's Nitan L'Tashlumin. Just one other potential nafkamina between the Rambam and the Ravid. What would you say about the following case? What would you say about a person who covets something that is worth less than a Shavah Pruta? So a Shavah Pruta is usually the monetary equivalent of something which has any halakhic value. Anything less than a Shavah Pruta has no halakhic value, has limited significance in halakha. So let's say I coveted, let's say theoretically, a Shavah Pruta nowadays is 5 cents. So let's say Chaim has a nice piece of gum. A nice piece of gum. That 3 pieces. So that may be worth more than a Shavah Pruta. One piece of gum is probably worth less than a Shavah Pruta. And I really want that piece of gum. So much so that I take it out of his mouth and start chewing it. I really could use a piece of gum now. And the question is, do I violate Lo Sachmud? Now, what's the Shaila? So it could be, that it depends on the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. Why? Because the Rambam holds that fundamentally the aver of Lo Sachmud is a feeling of coveting, an emotion of desiring my friend's object to the point that I take it. So therefore, does it really matter how valuable the object is? Even if the object has no halakhic value, if it belongs to my friend and I take it because I desired it, l'chora, according to the Rambam, even if it's worth less than a Shavah Pruta, even if it's one piece of gum in Chaim's mouth, which is for sure worth less than a Shavah Pruta, I would violate Lo Sachmud. However, according to the Ravid, who thinks that Lo Sachmud is really synonymous, akin to Lo Sigzol, and there the Aveira has to be violated by taking something which has monetary value from my friend. So potentially, if I covet and take something which is worse than a Shavah Pruta, according to the Ravid, potentially I would not violate Lo Sachmud because it's really similar to Lo Sigzol, and potentially the object has to have monetary value in order for me to violate Lo Sachmud. So that's another potential nafkamina between the Rambam and the Ravid. There are other nafkaminas.
What about somebody's
spouse's
affection?
So that's a great question. Or covet someone else's spouse?
An intangible
object. That's a very good question. I don't know. So it could be that it depends on this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid.
If we think about Lo Sachmud, I mean, that's
right. Excellent question, Aaron.